This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Let me wish all of our U.S. listeners a very happy Thanksgiving, and I hope that you're enjoying some time and some food with family and friends as we give thanks for this holiday season and this holiday. Actually, I want to thank each of you for coming and listening each week and for tuning into this. Some of you may be listening here on the actual day this is released, and if you're not, you're probably, again, enjoying an extra slice of pumpkin pie. My favorite is pecan pie, but nevertheless, I hope you're enjoying the day and happy Thanksgiving, and I give thanks for you guys every day for being a listener and tuning into this podcast regularly. I also want to express my thanks for all of the friends of the Magic Word who helped make this podcast possible through your financial donations and your pledges. And today I would like to make a big shout out to our newest friend of the Magic Word, Mr. Charles Cisneros. Welcome, Charles, to the Friends of the Magic Word. I appreciate your donation, just as I appreciate everyone again who comes and listens to the podcast. And if you can donate, that's always great. Today, we're going to be talking with a guest that whose name is well known to you. But before we do, I want to also mention that we had a contest a couple of weeks ago for a couple of DVD sets that were offered by Dan Fleshman. And we have the winners' names that have been drawn, and they will be announced at the end of this podcast. And so I'm going to be fairly short in the front end of this because our guest has a lot to talk about. But I also want to say that I know that this is going to be Black Friday coming up tomorrow. It's a big thing here in the U.S., I guess elsewhere then as well. And then also Cyber Monday coming up. But my important thing is, if you're going to be buying something online as opposed to going out and getting in the large crowds trying to buy something this holiday season for Cyber Monday or any time for that matter, please consider using Amazon.com and, of course, using our link at the bottom of the page of each of the pages on the blog for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Down there will be a little graphic that says we're an affiliate of Amazon. Click on that. It will take you to your site and you can log in. And that way that we get just a little bit of money back from each purchase that you make using Amazon. So I know you're going to use Amazon. This is the best way that you can kind of help us without actually subscribing to be a friend of the Magic Word and being a patron. So thank you guys very much for using that. Well, this week we are going to speak with someone who is part of a magical dynasty of the Wilson family. The second son of Mark and Mark Wilson and Nonnie Darnell. We're going to be speaking with Greg Wilson, where he's going to be talking a lot about the maintaining the legacy of the magic land of Alakazam. When we were in Phoenix, Arizona, or Scottsdale, actually, a suburb there, for the IBM convention earlier this summer, Greg and I sat down late at night, had a little bit of scotch, and had quite a lively conversation. I know that you're going to enjoy and learn a lot because he has a ton of stories and he shared a lot of them. But at some point, we just kind of had to cut that off because the night was getting late and the scotch was getting low. And so we had a good conversation. I think that you're going to enjoy this. So please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Greg Wilson, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and today we have a very special treat with someone who has been around for a long time, let me say, is part of a dynasty and family. You know, there are not a lot of magic dynasties, as there are other kinds of dynasties where that you have, let's say, in other show parts of show business where people are in the movies or television, you know, like Kirk Douglas, and you have, you know, his son Michael Douglas and other people, you know, kind of. But as far as today, I mean, we've had magic dynasties in the 1800s, but in the 1900s on into the 2000s, few, if any, I think, would surpass Mark Wilson and Nonnie Darnell, and I have with me Mr. Greg Wilson. I'm such an honor to have you here. Hello, Greg.
Hey there. Thank you so much.
And so, speaking of a dynasty, then you have no children. Is that right at this point, or do you have?
No, we're still practicing.
So, okay, that's right. And Mike, but your brother Mike has,
he has three kids.
Three, okay. Yeah. Are any of them interested in magic?
Actually, my niece, Sean, loves doing magic. Fantastic. And at every chance she can, she jumps to get on stage.
Is that right? And how old is she?
older than...
teenager?
No, she's in her 20s now.
Okay. So it's not a path that she is pursuing, at least as far as a career path and going into magic at this point?
It kind of is.
It could be really,
yeah.
Wow.
Although both my mother and I and my brother are all trying to dissuade her from it.
You know, which is kind of funny because I understand that you had done that and then now you're doing something else, you know, trying to provide or work with the legacy, basically, of Alakazam.
Yes.
But a
real quick note on my niece.
Yes.
I was very fortunate. The very first time I got to actually perform with her, it was at Magic Live a few years back.
Okay.
And Stan had asked us to come in and be part of the Sawing in Half show.
Oh, that was a great
It was one. So much fun.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get as many family members involved in the show as I could. Mm-hmm. So I got my brother to come in town, and he played my part. I played Dad. I had another girl that had been doing the train with me, so she knew the train, so she was the lead.
Right. And you had the original train from Alakazam?
I had the second one.
Okay.
The gold train.
Did Chip buy the first one?
No, nobody has. No, I have both.
Okay.
Dad has both. Mom has both.
Okay. It's in her
but
name.
Obviously, there's a third person that's needed, or a second person that's needed to make the trick work. Right. And Sean got to play that part.
Oh, that's fine.
And so I thought that was pretty neat that,
secretly that nobody else knew.
Nobody knew.
That's really kind of an insight. Well, there you go, folks. Yeah. You get hear something kind of special on the inside.
My
that
brother
is pretty
came
cool.
out and tickled his daughter's feet, which was kind of awkward. But
that it is funny. Because now you have the lady. She's Russian. Is that right?
No, that was your first wife.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to skip past that.
No, that's fine. No, but someone asked me, said, is he still married to the Russian lady? I think so, but no. Okay.
No, yeah.
It was different. That's fine. Because you were working then after a while with the Chinese acrobats for a while. But then that, how long of a period was that? I'm really jumping all over the board
sure,
here.
Sure, no problem. When I actually separated from the Russian lady, who shall remain nameless, I kind of went away from magic. And I had an opportunity to edit more. So I focused all my life work on editing, and through the process of editing TV commercials and sales demos for the Chinese acrobats, I was restructuring the show into something that was more Western and more entertaining.
Right.
And, well, not necessarily more entertaining, but more digestible for the American audience.
Yeah.
And then the producers asked me to actually go and start directing the shows. And they found out I spoke a little Chinese, so I went over to China and I worked with the troops. And brought them back, and then I ended up driving them cross country and setting the lights. I became the lighting director. I became the music director and everything. Yeah.
How many people were in the crew?
Oh, there was a troop of between 20 and 30, depending on which show it was.
But you kind of chief cook and bottle washer doing it all.
That was it. Yeah. And then the second year, we got another driver, so I didn't have to actually drive the bus every time. Mm-hmm. But I did the first year.
Driving the bus.
Yeah. It was really
How
grueling.
How funny is that? Yeah.
We had a motorhome with a big one of those giant motorhomes with a trailer behind and the troop inside.
How many people were in the troop?
Well, as you know, 20-some-odd people. That was a smaller troop when I had that one. Then when we had another driver, it was a bigger show.
Okay. Cool. That was what I was asking as far as how many people were. I didn't mean how many people were. We were in the troop.
I don't want to get in trouble for going over capacity on the van.
yeah, because they watch that very closely, I'm sure, in China. Yeah, with all their transportation. Yeah, I'm sure they got that.
Well, that was here in the States. Yeah.
That's right here in the States.
We were going cross country. It was
okay. Did you ever have a van breakdown?
Fortunately, no. But when I was touring my Big Illusion show, which I also called Alakazam, we had an incident. Was frightening. The road was covered with ice, and I was driving. I had a Ford Excursion then, a big four-wheel drive, and a 20-foot trailer. And Chris Mitchell and I were driving that. And the cast would fly, and we would drive, and then we'd pick up the cast and go to the shows. So in Lincoln, Nebraska, it was just horrible. We were going down the road.
I lived in Omaha. I could imagine what that's like.
We watched the truck slide off on the sides of the road.
And
finally, we decided, no, we got to stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you did.
We did. So
before that, you really
we
had something serious that was going to happen. You didn't have any tires ever fall off the axle or anything
like that. Oh, yes, all the time. Constantly. We were going from L.A. to Palm Springs.
Okay.
First time we ever had the trailer hooked up to the van, and we're going down, and all of a sudden we passed a truck, and a gust of wind caught the trailer from the backside, took that trailer, sent it spinning. We ended up sideways stopping all the traffic on the 10 freeway going out to Palm Springs. After we recovered from the shock with the entire cast in the car with the van with us, we got ourselves righted going down the highway, and then a few miles later a wheel goes flying past us. That looked like one of the trailer tires. Why don't we pull over? And the trailer was being a little wacky.
Yeah.
And we went over, and sure enough, the vibration from the first tailspin that we went through caused the lug nuts to loosen. And the wheel actually cut the lug nuts off, leaving part of the thread stuck inside the... So there was no way to put a tire back on.
Yeah, because the lug nut had part of the screw actually in that.
Yeah.
So you couldn't... Oh, my gosh.
So we limped on into the venue, which happened to be close enough, and the show was for Firestone. So
fortuitous.
Executives at Firestone called up the local Firestone dealership and
helped
they got the thing fixed, and we were back on the road and off to Colorado.
Wow, that's a funny story. You know, and speaking about the... Chinese Acrobats, as I recall it, didn't Becky Blaney travel with them for a while too?
That was in the beginning years of the Chinese Acrobats, yes.
Okay, because I remember she was with them. Of course, she's from Houston, Walter Blaney's daughter, and that she had them at the Six Flags.
And she was hosting the show.
Right,
exactly. She did a great job.
Yes, yeah. And so that was the beginning before you guys took it over. So, or something, or how was
No, my father actually started the Chinese Acrobat tours soon after we'd come back from China and developed it into a big business. At the end of my father's control of the company, they actually had a tent that went into fair dates, and it was a very successful venture. Mm-hmm. And then my brother took that over.
What year would that have been, Greg?
I was in college still, so I wasn't really involved.
Okay.
So that was the late 80s.
Mm-hmm. What were you studying?
Film.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a film major at USC.
USC.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a minor in radio and television.
Oh, good for you.
And so whenever that you talk about film, I mean, I'm very interested in it, the editing of it and everything. I mean, I'm not into it as much as what you were because that was your major and everything, but I still find that fascinating. You know, I remember reading a book that Rudy Colby had recommended about something Skywalker. It was George Lucas's autobiography about... his first movie, and apparently that his passion is editing. He and his wife, you know, loved to edit. So whenever they had made their first movie, American Graffiti, was that it?
Yeah.
He'd spent a lot of time, I guess, editing that one and loved it. Have you read the book? You know which one I'm talking about?
No, I don't. I look forward to it.
It is, I wish I remember, something Skywalker. Look up George Lucas, and it's a very good read, and it's something as a filmmaker that you would appreciate then as well. So she had it, and so your brother then was handling that then, and then you said you were in school, and then what? I kind of interrupted.
Oh, certainly. And then he developed it with another partner who had been a translator.
Mike did.
My brother did. And his partner then developed a company another level together, the two of them. And ended up moving to Branson. My brother lived in Branson for a while. Mm-hmm. He's still there. And that's where he took the family.
Is he producing some other shows in Branson now?
He is in an entirely different career now.
Oh, really? Okay.
He works with the IEEE, the International Electrical and Electricians in Engineering. It's three E's that involve electricity and engineering.
Okay.
And it's an international organization that controls everything from what the USB plug shape is to what your wall outlets are and how much currency flows over the grid and everything. They have...
It's like a federal association?
It's
like
an association, right, that
not
is
a union.
International.
Okay.
And it's amazing. And my brother's involved with the charity side of taking solar power into Africa and the Himalayan mountains. Yeah, China wasn't far enough away for him, so now he has to go to Africa.
Wow.
Yeah, at 60-something years old, he tromps through the jungles of Africa and carries his baggage over his head as he goes through the rivers.
Right.
It's amazing.
And he's providing solar
electricity? I'm going to go do the shows where I get a nice hotel room and stay. You know, he can go into Africa and
get dengue fever or whatever.
Malaria,
yeah, you don't have to worry about that.
Thank you.
You just have to worry about having some bad food or bad sushi or something is all the worst thing maybe that or whatever. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Well, that sounds so great that he's providing, you know, because somebody really needs to do that. He's got a passion for that, obviously.
He
that,
just, not to brag, but I'm proud of my big brother.
Sure.
He was just in Ghana talking to the World Bank about financing for his projects.
Really?
At a big national World Bank convention.
Because I'm sure that's something that is pretty expensive to do. You know, I've heard of these things that are like microloans. You've heard of them, like where some people are wanting to open a bike shop in India and we need you to give me $25, you know, or something. And you get like back $26 once the guy gets it. You know what I'm talking about?
Exactly.
This is something, though, that costs a lot more, obviously, if he's going to the big banks to try to get.
I just wish he had time to help me figure out how to finance my projects.
We're going to get to that. I want to talk about that definitely because that's why I was buying some things. I just want to support what you're doing. But going back to that, trying to preserve the history of Alakazam, and Mike was in that. Now, were you ever in the first? His first one was broadcast, I think, in October of 1961. October 10th.
October 1st?
1st.
1960, yeah. You just got your 1 and your 0.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
not a bad memory that comes
Good.
To mind.
Yeah.
And so that ran then for how many years?
Total of 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Remember, you said 3 years on NBC, two on CBS? ABC.
Two on CBS and three on ABC.
Yeah. Okay. The reason it switched networks was because?
The sponsor changed.
Okay. It wasn't Kellogg's anymore.
Not Kellogg's anymore.
So I thought Kellogg's had them for the whole 5 years.
That would have been nice.
I'm sure they would have liked that.
Yeah.
Well, originally, though, it was Dr. Pepper when he was in Dallas.
Dr. Pepper and 3M. Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing.
Okay.
Scotch brand tape.
Yeah,
that was the era when there was some lawsuit about the Scotch brand cellophane tape, and they couldn't keep all those names. They had to give up one.
So they gave up cellophane?
I don't know.
It's kind of like Kleenex. You know, the people think of tissues, and so they say Kleenex, but tissue is the generic name, basically, but Kleenex became, and it's kind of like part of cellophane. Scotch tape is something that everybody uses as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So anyhow, they changed after Kellogg's. Who was the next sponsor after that?
Various sponsors.
They had
Mark's Toys, they had Mattel. I'm just getting into that era now and discovering who all it was.
Because when I watch some of these old black and white TV shows, or, you know, let's say I'm listening on Sirius XM to Radio Classics, and they play some of these old ads that are built in, you know, like when, George Burns is pitching a product or something, you know, he's talking about it in the context of a show, or they're drinking that kind of Maxwell House coffee or whatever it is. You know, it's hard to get that branding out of a show.
Right.
And so your dad had that Kellogg's deeply ingrained. I mean, so it was the K was the middle of Alakazam. As I recall also that he added an extra L so it would be symmetric and having four letters in the front and the back.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a nerd. I
don't
remember
Good
you.
Good for you. Yeah.
Well, I loved it.
It's interesting. If you watch the shows, you'll see as they go through the season, through the first season, they shot 77 shows in the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. The majority of the shows were actually shot in the first 2 years.
So they had to not only shoot them, but they had to come up with the magic. They had to build the props. They had after they came up with the ideas. Leo Behnke and Bev and everybody, I'm sure, were working on all these.
Team. And Bob Fenton and Bob Towner.
Okay.
They were the main team.
Magic makers.
Yeah.
And then after they would draw it out, then they had to build it and go to the shop
Carl
and everything.
Owen was building in the beginning with John Daniel. After the first year, John Gaughan came out as a teenager after he finished high school.
Mm-hmm.
And
before he went to UT.
Started learning from Carl Owen and assisting with the building.
Yeah.
And then as the show went on and as expenses rose, Dad had to pull all the construction inside the company.
Mm-hmm.
And Leo Behnke's uncle, or no, his dad, had a plumbing shop on Venice Boulevard. And they rented one of the other buildings in his plumbing company, and that was their construction shop. And they had a Shop King multiple unit
tool that they
bandsaw
to cut wood and whatnot.
John still has that tool.
That's funny.
Yeah.
In the plumbing shop was also building illusions.
Right off of Venice Boulevard.
Okay. So that
there's so many stories.
Blows my mind about 77 shows in a year with there being 52 weeks and also having to build and practice and then shoot. They weren't shooting live.
Almost. It was the next best thing to live. I just found as I'm getting deeper and deeper into the archives now, and I'm finding paperwork that was just saved. I don't know why it was saved, but I'm so glad. I found the original call sheets for the crew at CBS, which means it shows me who was the camera operator and what was their call time. And what shows were they shooting on that day. So now I have production dates, not just air dates.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought, as it just logically in my head, I'm thinking, okay, so they had a week. They would come up with a show. They'd shoot on the weekend or sometime in the week, and then they'd throw it together editing-wise, and it would go on the air on Saturday, and then they'd have another week, and they'd do another show. No, they shot between 2 and 4 shows at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing that they were able to accumulate that much magic to be able to shoot 2 to 4 shows in one day.
Holy moly.
And the reason for that was...
And they were half-hour shows?
Half-hour shows that were done live.
Now, that didn't include the... didn't have cartoons then or not?
There were the cartoons, yeah.
So really, as far as the magic portion and your dad talking and everything, is probably no more than maybe 15 minutes?
Varied between 15 and 20 minutes.
20 minutes, yeah. Okay, yeah.
But the magic was complicated. The illusions. The reason that they had to do it in such an intense manner... is because they were only paid $5,000 an episode.
For the whole kit and caboodle and crew and everything?
Yeah, Dad thought, wow, you know, when he was in Texas making the local shows, that $5,000, I can't spend that much.
Yeah, it's high
money.
Cotton.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, it would be great.
Yeah.
Then he comes out to L.A., he's at CBS Television City, and the expenses are through the roof.
Yeah.
Because I found this paperwork now, it was $10,000 plus for that one day. In the studio, not counting what the cast cost or...
That's just the studio cost.
Just the studio, just the union team, just the building, the lights.
So that's why they tried to shoot as many as they could in the day to kind of capitalize on their time, I guess, so they wouldn't have to pay for an extra day and more money. Huh.
And we're kind of jumping around here, but I just want to help you.
Yeah,
because
please.
I found this film, which we debuted here at the convention, that was the Alakazam annual report to Kellogg's, and it was like a Mad Men type film. Dad sitting on the desk at his office with his narrow tie and his slick looking coat, and he's just talking to the Kellogg's executives as a businessman.
Yeah.
So it's not Mark Wilson the performer; it's an entirely different person, and he's explaining to them why the show is successful and why Kellogg's should keep investing in it. And it was his plea to them to continue sponsoring the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard the stories about, oh, yeah, and then Kellogg's canceled and they changed their cereal and we had to move on. And I didn't understand the depth of their attempt to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing goes deep into the psychology of associating magic with the Kellogg's brand.
Mm-hmm.
And how the kids in the show would say, Dad would come out and he'd say, hi, you know, Magic Land of Alakazam, where strange things happen and blah, blah, blah. And then turn to the kids and say, what's the magic word? And the audience shouts, Kellogg's.
Yeah.
So what they were trying to do is to ingrain into the children's minds the concept that magic and Kellogg's are
synonymous.
Associated. Yes. Mm-hmm. One of the stories he tells in the film is a fan letter that he got from a magician that was with their daughter, I believe, or a friend, a young kid, crossing the street. And spontaneously, the little kid looked up at the street sign. It's a walk, don't walk. Timed it just right and said, Kellogg's. And the light changed to walk. And it said, see, Dad, I'm magic too. And a lot of magicians wrote in at the time, wrote into the show, saying, we use Kellogg's as our magic word in our birthday party shows.
Mm-hmm.
So Dad
was trying. But not only that, they also had some film. I mean, your dad said there was some sort of a camera or some technology that was developed.
Yes, that's another part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just the business side, but also the innovations that they made.
The CBS television method, the TVR system at the time, incorporated videotape with film. When he was in Dallas, Texas, working for Scotch Brand Tape, they had a new concept of let's see if we can serialize or syndicate or bicycle is the other term they used to carry your shows around to different stations so that you didn't have to do the show live every time at every station.
Because he was for a while jumping from in the same day going station to station.
Interesting. Mom just told me stories on the drive up here about...
that you'd never heard before.
I never heard before.
Did you record them?
No.
Okay.
Just in my brain.
Well, we are now.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you. she would read science fiction stories to my dad as he was driving to help keep him awake.
Keep him awake, okay.
Yeah. And sometimes mom would drive.
Because they were going from...
I don't know if she had a driver's license.
But they were driving from station to station because they needed to shoot.
Or city to city, and maybe the next day was the shoot, or yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Sometimes they would get there just in time, and dad would go on camera, and mom would be unpacking the car, mm-hmm. setting the props up for him as the show was happening. Amazing. And then when dad was actually in the National Guard at the time, the Air National Guard in Texas, and when my brother was an infant, he had to go off to do his service. Mm-hmm. That was during the Korean War. And mom had to do the show by herself. And so dad recorded a record that was played back. Nani, now show the box empty. And apparently, coordinated with the voiceover gentleman at the time, mom would do all the magic on camera.
It sounds kind of like the banana bandana thing, you know, where she's listening.
Exactly.
She's yeah. doing it. That's funny.
I think my mom doesn't get half the credit or even a third of the credit that she should for what she does.
She was more than just an assistant and a box jumper, for
phenomenally
sure.
Phenomenally more.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. By the way, we're having a little monkey shoulder scotch as we were talking over here. So cheers again then to you, Greg. Thanks so very much. you can sit it there as well. Anyhow, I was just thinking about the monkey shoulders.
Oh, so I was telling you about the videotape.
Yes, you are.
So when Scotch first sent all the videotape source material, I mean the actual stock, to mom and dad, mm-hmm. they sent 72 reels of video, 2-inch video, which are very heavy reels, mm-hmm. 5 to 10 pounds. I mean, more like 10 pounds each. They're very heavy. Stacked.
You can only record how much, like an hour or two?
An hour, yeah.
On that big thing.
On that giant reel.
Yeah.
Stacked at their apartment. And they had a little apartment in Dallas, Texas. And they had more videotape in their apartment than most television stations in all of Texas.
Wow.
Yeah, because they were actually pioneering the use of videotape for broadcast.
Right. I found that interesting that I'd never heard this before. Again, that I'm not a film student. Radio and television had to do with control room and editing and things like that. But as far as the film, I thought it interesting when you were saying that when they would shoot that into the lens to record something. Explain that again?
So the CBS television process, the TVR process, was the show was recorded on video. Initially,
two-inch
tapes. Now this is network. This is not Dallas anymore. Now we've gone to the LA. Big television city.
Yeah. So which those were expensive, as I understand. That's why there are not many copies, if any, of Johnny Carson's shows, because it was so expensive. They just record over those videos again.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Then that tape was transferred to 35 millimeter because they had no way to physically edit the video.
Yeah.
There was no way to make a cut without causing a glitch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they had to switch it over to film, cut on film, which meant that everything that you saw, whether it was a keyed-in graphic or dissolve or a cut, it was all done live. So the show really was performed live right up until from the end of the opening titles to the first commercial break.
You were talking about that also. Like, for an example, when they showed Huckleberry Hound and some of the cartoons, it's like you say the cut, and so they're still playing the music, but then they would come back after that little cartoon, just even in the entry credits.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that was played live on to the videotape.
Right.
And then...
Right with the cartoon.
Transferred later to back to film.
Wow. Okay.
And then that 35 millimeter was cut. And there was no audio mixing because there was no money for that. Mm-hmm. So all the audio, sound effects, and everything, the music was all done live.
Was what it was.
Yeah.
Wow.
And a lot of this I didn't really realize until I got this special video that we just debuted here at the convention.
Mm-hmm.
On the film that I was telling you about, the annual report to Kellogg's, which was the only one that they ever made.
J. Walter Thompson to the ad agency?
Leo Burnett agency.
Leo Burnett, sorry. Okay.
J. Walter Thompson came later.
Yeah, well, that was actually my major. My major was in advertising with a minor in radio television. So that was what I knew about.
Where were we?
Oh, so you're talking about...
That was another drink of scotch.
That's right. Maybe you should. You're talking about the ad agency and...
Oh, yeah, the cartoons and the, yeah, live, the, cartoons. The live essence of it. So the film, the annual report, talks about a videotape that was made for $10,000 where my dad's company went into CBS and asked them to please take all of the television commercials that were made for Kellogg's and string them together on one reel. So they actually had to go into all the master tapes and take the best takes of each commercial. Mm-hmm. And I found all the lists that show, take number 13 or take number 3 or some were first takes. And then assemble them onto this special reel. And he said it cost them $10,000 at that day.
And today, $10,000 is worth how much?
$85,000.
In today's dollars. Yeah.
And now that's just...
Now you say it cost him. It cost your pop.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now that's just the translating the money. That's not translating what the studio union rates would have increased to.
Mm-hmm.
So it could well have been much, much more than that
these
days. Anyway, that reel was something that rang a bell in my head. And I said, I think I've seen something like that. And so we found this film in my parents' house by accident.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. I don't really get to go into the house very often and dig through mom and dad's stuff because they know I just won't leave. I'll just keep digging.
And, Greg, so, you've got to go home.
Yeah, please. We want to go to bed.
Yeah.
And it was late at night when I found it. So we ran back to the office. My brother happened to be visiting in town with his niece, and I really wanted to share it with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we set up the projector and played it. So that night I found this 2-inch video.
Yeah.
The next day or two later, I actually went to another friend of mine who had a 2-inch machine, and I took him the tape. And I was so excited because how can I unlock the secrets of this tape? It's the only source I know.
Right.
I've been looking forever to find somebody with a 2-inch machine.
Holy grail.
Yeah. And he put it up. He looked at it. He said, oh, good, it's brown tape. I don't have to bake it. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. That means it doesn't have to sit all weekend in an oven.
Oh, seriously.
To bring up the temperature of the tape so that the oxide doesn't, so the glue will hold the magnetic content onto the actual tape itself. So apparently the brown tape doesn't need that. So he threw it right up, started playing it, and I started to see this crisp, clean, incredible image.
Mm-hmm. First generation.
Mm-hmm. The only tape of its kind of Alakazam at all that's left.
Mm-hmm.
And then he stopped it, and he rewound it, and he's handed it back to me and said, yep, it works.
He didn't play the whole thing. He just played a few.
Yep. Just teased
enough to tease you.
And I said, David, please, would you please?
Play a little more.
I don't have any money to pay you.
Yeah.
Could you work a deal for me? And so he was very nice. He said, you want me to play a 58-year-old tape on a 50-year-old piece of equipment with heads, the head that reads the tape, that aren't made anymore. So when these heads die, I don't have a business. So I can't do it free.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I of course I understand.
Because he was doing this for other people. That's his job.
That's his job. He does the Ed Sullivan Show. He does Dick Cavett. He does everything.
Hmm.
He's like the go-to guy for the industry.
Okay. Hmm.
And that's why I trusted him with my tapes.
Of course.
So
and he happened to be a friend of yours. Didn't you say that you knew from college or something?
I found him through other friends.
Yeah. Okay. It was a friend of a friend. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he gave me terms to pay him back after the convention.
Okay.
And so I'm very happy to say that because of the love and the support of the IBM and the magicians that came here today, I can pay that bill.
That's fantastic. That is really good news.
That's really good. That means I can do something else later.
Right. And so once this is done, then you're going to put this out then onto your website?
There's an hour and a half of content in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many commercials. It's just amazing. So I'm going through it, and I'm finding all the really cool gems.
Mm-hmm.
As they were ending the series at CBS and going to move to ABC, and they'd sold new sponsors already because they had enough advanced warning.
Okay,
That they were able to do it within 1 week to switch the show from one network to the next. And sponsors changed, and because of reruns and whatnot, they were able to make that switch. The last week of production at CBS must have been incredibly intense. I found the document that shows the last day of the shoot, which was June 19, 1962. That was the very last shoot date, and I happened to be performing at the Magic Castle on June 19, 2019.
Okay,
which was kind of fun.
Yeah,
Mom and Dad came that night, and I mentioned it to the audience. So the 19th was their last shoot day. They shot four shows that day.
Mm-hmm.
So 70, whatever, through 77. Then the earlier in that week on the 12th, so it's just a few days earlier, they were shooting commercials for the new sponsors.
Mattel and all the others, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. This is Mark's Toys and Landside Games.
Okay.
And it was very interesting to see the difference between the Kellogg's commercials and how much fun they were having producing the Kellogg's commercials. And Dad would do fun things like, you know, the guy that's running the slate, he'd go, Dad would put a peanut on top of the slate. So when the slate came down and clapped, it would break the peanut. They were very playful. The slate operator would sometimes open the slate and whack himself in the head with the top half of it. It was a family. Mm-hmm. It had a very good communal feeling.
When it was had the Kellogg's.
With the
brand.
Kellogg's.
But later it became more
now,
serious.
On that one day, that last day that they had to shoot all this stuff,
yeah,
it was intense. And this is the only glimpse I've had of this backstage side of the production of Alakazam.
Yeah.
And I've never heard my dad be angry before. And he wasn't really angry. He was just concerned. He wanted to get everything done.
Sure.
And he says, Andy, what do you want me to do? You want me to get this in one take? We haven't even rehearsed it. I don't have my bang on yet. And I'm asking Dad, what do you mean I don't have my bang on yet? Dad doesn't remember the phrase, but I'm going to play it again for him and see. I think they must have had a phrase, yeah, we can bang these out quickly. Oh. We can knock them out quickly.
Yeah, sure.
And so they were trying to get the commercials done quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have the same wonderful, magical, creative inspirations that the Kellogg's ones did because they took more time to make the Kellogg's commercials.
Right, yeah.
And these were, oh, we got a new toy sponsor. What are we going to do? All right.
Yeah.
We'll hold the cloth up. We'll cover the table, and you swap the prop out from under the table, and we'll lower the cloth, and there's a new prop.
Right.
You know, simple stuff.
Well, and didn't you also say that, what were there, like 99 episodes, or was it like one more than MASH or something?
A total of, yes, more than, not MASH, but Gilligan's Island.
Gilligan's Island, sorry.
Yeah. And the 99th episode was never aired.
Do you have it somewhere on video?
Wouldn't that be fun to try and find?
Yeah.
I went, when I was digging through the house, that one chance I had recently,
right?
I found the 99th episode.
You haven't viewed it yet.
I have it.
Okay.
I viewed it. It's totally different. It was a new attempt to try and make a show for a new sponsor. I think it was the same type of concept when they were moving networks from one to the next. Dad was looking to the future. All right, now we have to modify the show. We've done that one. Now what's going to be the next thing? So his hairstyle is different. The costumes are different. They're not on the Alakazam set. It was a thing that was in combination with the Boy Scouts of America, trying to find a new kind of sponsorship idea, using a different kind of sponsor. And then, to the cherry part is, I found the work print. And so what happens is you have your master, which is usually 35 millimeter, and then you'll make a 60 millimeter work print, which means the audio and the picture are separate pieces of film. There's mag audio, and then there's the work print, which is double sprockets, which means there's two sets of sprockets on it.
Okay.
There's no space for the audio track. So I found a double sprocket film, and I knew as soon as I saw that, I said, oh, this is different. And we threw it up on the projector, and it was in color.
Was that the first color that he did?
That was the first color that I found of my folks.
Mm-hmm.
And so it shows him at a Boy Scout camp doing magic for the Boy Scouts, and now I can take that with the final edited version and sync up the picture and put the audio back with it, because I don't have the audio. I just have the color picture, but I have the audio from the black and white.
Did you ask him about how that was different? In other words, I was thinking about what a dramatic change that digital has made where you have a higher pixel count in the movies and on television now, you know, when actors really, you know, when they get close-ups, I mean, you can count the pores in their skin. But when it went from black and white to color, that was a fundamental shift also. And I was wondering if your dad was trying to do something different with color TV also at the time.
Very much so.
Okay.
Do you remember the Laugh-In set?
Of course.
The big Laugh-In wall where they would pop through the windows?
Yeah.
And it was like a Mondrian painting where the colors are all in big blocks and you've got just the covered in color.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did with a show that I found that they shot in 1968, which came after Alakazam, Alakazam in 65. So
and Doug Henning's special came out in...
So that was much later.
It was later than after that?
Oh, yeah, it was after, well after Magic Circus, well after all this other stuff, yeah. The one in 68 looked like a Laugh-In type show because the set was giant flats with mottled color on them and the psych with washes of color and key, what are they called, gobos?
Gobos, yeah.
With different splashes of color. And the whole thing, that Rebo's costume changed color. Mom's costumes were so vibrant, everything. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, speaking of Rebo, by the way, Bev Bergeron had told me before about a lot of the magic that, that you guys had created that other people have had used. I remember Bev talking about the elephant vanish, I think, that Siegfried and Roy had later used. Then he said, yep, that was my idea. You know, and I was standing back there. I may be wrong about that story, but I'm sure he's told you some stories, you know, that I think probably between, you know, Bev and Ricky J, I think that everything in magic was invented between those two guys, you know, if you talk to them, actually. But I know that there was a lot of original magic that they had to churn out all the time, and it was really good stuff, you know.
I found Dad's notebook.
Did you?
So now I have...
That could be a good book to publish
eventually.
I have
a lot of proof now that I can... We can talk about later.
Well, that is really... See, because another thing is I had talked years ago with Cesario Pelez about Le Grand David, and he was saying a lot of people had taken their ideas because theirs were original ideas then also. But he just... It's one of those things like you just can't chase it. You got to let it go and move on and invent something else, you know?
As I'm watching these shows, and I have to watch them very closely, and I watch them multiple times because editing them and putting them together for the website, I'm watching each one 3 to 5 times, if not more. It's amazing to see the teamwork that it took to make the show.
Mm-hmm.
Bev was phenomenal at being that secret guy that made things happen in the background.
Mm-hmm. He was more than just a clown, that's for sure.
much, much more.
Yeah.
He, you know, there's, you never know when he's got an animal hanging off his back.
That's funny.
Some bunny or a duck or something.
Sure.
Or,
yeah.
Or perhaps a prop is new and the mounts are a little tight, and so you got to whack a little harder to get things apart.
Mm-hmm.
There was a duck bucket that happened to have that
stuck.
And I watched Bev, and he with his clown arm makes a big swing with his arm and comes down and whacks the top of the thing because it just wouldn't come apart.
Yeah.
And I guess they knew that in rehearsal, and so when it was live, it's just got to work.
Right.
And there's so many times you can see where he's working with Mark and they're looking at each other saying, hope you know what's next.
Yeah, it's kind of like, that's funny. Line.
Yeah, right.
Trick. Hand me something.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that's my funny. Mom, it was just amazing how she would just make it work no matter what was needed.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new illusions where the paint is literally drying. Those stories are true.
You told me about that. Or you had mentioned that the other day, I think, in your lecture. And tell us a story about where your mom had rented a costume.
It was a boat trick where they assemble a toy yacht on a table, and they had never had a chance to rehearse it. Mom had not really figured out how to be in it, right? And so as they're performing it on camera live, they have to make it work. It's too expensive to do a second take. They can't pay that studio for more time,
right?
And certainly can't have the audience watch it twice.
Mm-hmm.
It won't get the same reaction from the kids, so they just had to make it work. And she comes out of it, and she's wearing a cute little sailor outfit, which is not something she would normally have. So it had been a rental.
Okay.
And got some paint on it. She was very, very embarrassed to return it.
To have to return that, with a little bit of paint that was probably nondescript and hard to see, then anyhow. Now, Mike was in some of the early episodes, I guess, also.
Throughout
was,
all the
from the through, beginning, he was in there.
From Dallas on through Alakazam. He was on television younger than I was. He started earlier.
Well, that was what I was going to talk about then next, because my son Sean is going to love this episode because he loved watching you do your manipulation, with your dad.
Thank
you. And way back when, it's like when my son said, "Oh, you were talking to Greg Wilson?" Because he used to watch you. It wasn't that Magical Land of Alakazam, obviously, because my son is 40 years old, so that would have been, was it Mumbo Jumbo's Magic or something like that, I think, on
That's
HBO
when I debuted the Wakeling routine.
Yes. Yeah. And you were about how old back then?
16.
Okay. Yeah.
Alan started teaching me that routine when I was about 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. And every week I would go to the office and have magic class with Alan. Mm-hmm. And he would teach me in the next phase. Not each week, but, a bit at a time. And it took actually 3 years before he would allow me to perform it. Mm-hmm. And he said...
It felt like it took that long before you got it.
He wanted to make sure it was... Not just that I got it, that I would have it for the rest of my life.
Oh, okay.
He said, this is a piece of magic you're going to do for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And he was right.
Wow. Well, he was a brilliant guy. And the book that Jim Steinmeier had done on him, I think,
phenomenal.
It was. It was one of my favorite books in the library there. And so you continued then in performing for a long number of years until at what point did you finally decide, I'd rather really kind of pursue the preservation of the legacy?
Well, I haven't given up magic.
Okay, well, I didn't mean to imply that, but I meant...
I love performing. Yeah. But when I was doing the show at Knott's Berry Farm, it was fortunately a nicely paying gig. Mm-hmm. I didn't become wealthy, but it paid nicely.
Yeah.
And it allowed me to take a little break and invest money into building the website, because it takes a lot of money to just get a website started. Mm-hmm. There's all those startup fees. And so I bought 2 years worth of hosting. I bought 2 years worth of the SSL certificates and all those things, mm-hmm. the software with the continuing plans and all
that. I know with my podcast, same thing. That's why that I am always trying to solicit patrons to help defray these costs, because...
we can't do it free. We would love to do it free.
Of course
free.
We would. Yeah.
We would love to just make this available for everybody.
Sure. Yeah.
But... my hosting is on Amazon, mm-hmm. and I use that for the video content because they have the best streaming service. It's the same streaming service that the studios use.
Yeah.
And I can protect the footage that way.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. And everybody gets it really crisp, very fast, mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what kind of system you're on, which took a lot of research.
And so as far as the website, what is the website where people can go then right now?
Alakazamarchives.com.
And that's with two L's.
Yes. Alakazam. One word, no space, archives, Archives, archives.com.
.com, not net, okay.
Yeah, .com.
And what do you find there?
Everything I can possibly put up from Alakazam. So I started with the fan mail because the fan mail is really fun.
Some PDFs of that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The letters from the network and other business letters. Letters from magicians. Melbourne Christopher wrote to Dad. Countless people wrote to Dad.
And people just wrote fan letters, because you showed those to me earlier, and you said, did you ever send in a fan letter? If you did, it's probably in here someplace.
And if any of your listeners wrote a fan letter in, please write to me, Wilson@alakazamarchives.com, and tell me, and we'll look for it. I've got them alphabetized.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because they kept the envelopes and everything, too. I think that's amazing, because they must have gotten a ton of letters.
They did. And I've gone through a lot of them, not everything.
Sure.
And I have some wonderful volunteers mm-hmm. that come in every chance they can.
And the fact that your mom and dad would actually respond to many of those letters also.
Yeah.
To have the time and everything else they were doing and rehearsing and building and traveling. And goodness.
The letters to my mom are really fun.
Yeah, like what?
Oh, have you ever done pinup pictures?
Okay. Okay.
Have you?
Okay, then.
Yeah.
Well, she was a very beautiful lady.
You feel the same way about me that I feel about you?
Wow.
Yeah, she got some really some heavy-duty fans.
Heavy breathing fans, maybe.
So I forget who. Maybe it was Harry Anderson. I forget who said it, but it's a great quote. As Nani Darnell jump-started the hormones of many Americans, many boys across America.
Well, she's very leggy, you know, that yes. She had the...
And the complaints from the mothers
about
how she should cover her legs.
Is that right?
Yes, lots of those.
That's interesting, too.
And there's a fun letter. They did a whole cooking scene with Rebo's Bakery.
Okay.
And it was just a themed show with the bakery and cooking. And so, of course, they didn't add any water to the flour in the show because they didn't want to make it messy in the prop.
Mm-hmm.
So a child at home tried to imitate making a magic cake with flour only and
without
put it in the
water.
Oven without any water, and it actually exploded
and
caught their kitchen on fire. And she wrote in, "How stupid can you people be to make a show like that?" And she was irate. It was so funny.
Wow. Some people. So
watch your children closer.
Boy, yes, exactly right.
And another kid wrote in, sorry to interrupt
you. No.
But he wrote in about, I'm graduating from high school, and I'm going to do the big talent show at school, and I'm going to do the bullet catching, and there's nothing you can tell me that will stop me. And I thought, my gosh, what did they write back to this?
Yeah.
This young man.
He's going to do a bullet catch.
It's going to
in
do
high
a bullet
school.
Catch in high school. This was not current day where you could, I guess,
yeah, they're different
borrow
methods.
Your dad's gun.
Yeah.
And dad wrote back, there is absolutely no safe way to do the bullet catching. Please, I will help you with any magic you want.
But don't do that.
Don't do that. I'll help you with whatever trick you want to do, but not that one. And so I was so curious. What happened? So I start to look back to this guy's hometown newspapers.
Yeah.
There was no report.
That's good.
That was good. And then I looked his name up, and I discovered that he became the world's foremost authority on Jewish biblical coins.
That's odd.
And
okay.
He's a highly published, highly recognized authority of Jewish biblical coins. Yeah. So.
Huh.
I guess he didn't do the bullet catch.
Well, apparently not. Yeah. He must have been convinced, okay, there is no safe way of doing it. You know, that when you get those kinds of things, it seems like they would raise a red flag. And I'm talking about like any kind of a celebrity that you would get something, you know, that there's certain types of things like I need to respond right away or maybe call 911, have somebody go and check this guy out, you know, before he goes and shoots up a school or something, you know.
Well, that's why they had no magic that did anything destructive on the show.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the train was invented as opposed to doing the song in half.
That's an interesting story. And I know that people my age and others know about why that they did the train, but some young people who might be listening to this may not know the story. Go ahead and tell about why they decided to do the train.
Well, it started back in Dallas, and Dad did a cut and restored tie just as a trick on one of the Dallas local shows.
Yeah.
And they got letters that came in from mothers saying, my child has now cut all of my husband's ties, and you owe us a tie.
Yeah.
And so they decided not to do anything that was harmful to another person on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of putting swords into a Temple of Benares, they created the Alakazam Castle and put wands into it.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have the same magic trick with a different presentation.
Right, rather than sharp, pointy things that kids might hurt themselves
with. So the train started as
because they'll put their sister in a big box from their refrigerator box or something.
Chop her up.
Yeah, that's right.
So the train began as a stretching.
Oh, didn't know that.
And in order to then continue the stretching, they put a tunnel over the middle and separated the coal car from the engine. And Mom was stretched.
Okay.
And then once they got to the edge of where that tunnel cover was, they dropped in not blades, but dividers. They were obviously wooden dividers with a piece of metal in the middle to make the flat part.
Okay.
But there was a wood edge around it, so there was no sharp edge. So they dropped these two dividers in. Then they made the middle part vanish by removing the tunnel.
Oh, okay.
And now her middle's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then they separated the two halves onto the trolley trestle and the top and the foot hand.
Right.
And later on, we just eliminated the tunnel.
Right.
Eliminated the stretching part because it was just too long. But for many years, that was the presentation.
I didn't know about the stretching part. I just thought, because I recall there was something that they were trying to make it more fun because they didn't want it to look too serious and having blades and thinking there was going to be a bloodless kind of a cutting your sister in half kind of a thing.
And the original one, they had children on stage holding Mom's hands and her feet.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, there was not like a peanut gallery in the audience, was there?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Live audience for every show.
Okay. How many kids? I mean, like 10, 20, 100? How many?
No, 10 to 20 in the Dallas shows.
Mm-hmm.
But 200, 300 kids.
Oh, really? In the ones in L.A.?
The Alakazam shows. Yeah. Huh. And I'm very proud of my parents because diversity was just natural for them. Not to tell stories outside of school, but the scotch is really good.
It is.
In Dallas, Texas, mm-hmm. was quite different for my mother than growing up in San Diego, mm-hmm. in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
In San Diego and L.A., it was, you didn't really think much about diversity. It was not the same as Texas. And so when they first did their fair dates in Texas, when they're doing the Texas State Fair in Dallas, there was one day a week that Black people were allowed to come to the fair.
Okay. They weren't allowed except on certain special occasions.
Quite shocking to me. I couldn't even imagine that.
Of course.
But that was just that era.
Mm-hmm.
And Mom was shocked by that because it was, why that? And so when they did Alakazam, you watch the opening of the show and you see the scan of the kids in the audience.
Okay.
And you'll see it's a very diverse audience. Mm-hmm. They went to all different kinds of Boy Scouts and Girl Scout troops to bring in everybody. And I'm very proud of them for that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. How did they solicit the audience? Did the studio bring them in or did your mom and dad?
It was a combination of the two. Okay. But I think a lot of the responsibility fell on my parents mm-hmm. as the seasons went on.
I understand. Okay.
Because I noticed as the shows went on, they started to advertise, if you want tickets to come see the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Dad's address. It wasn't the studio address.
I'm surprised they didn't have something on the Kellogg's box of saying, to write in. Yeah. Since did they ever have any kind of magic tricks, per se, on the Kellogg's boxes?
It was a series of 10 magic tricks
on
the Kellogg's boxes. And that's one of the articles that I've written about in the website.
Mm-hmm.
I found some Kellogg's boxes that Mom and Dad picked up from the factory mm-hmm. when they went to go visit the Kellogg's
factory. They haven't been glued.
They weren't glued. They're beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a set that we're going to put up for – I need to do a fundraiser because I need to keep this going. I can't let it fail.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to do a GoFundMe or something like that.
How will people find out about that? I mean, will you post that on Facebook or everything? Yeah,
that's the other thing I haven't done yet is I've only reached out to the limited magic community that are associated with my parents and their mailing list, about 5,000 people, of which I have – currently, I'm just under 1,000 members on the website.
Well, a lot of people listen to this. You know that if somebody wants to get on the mailing list and help you out, how can they get in touch with you?
Please, even just come to watch the shows at alakazamarchives.com, or you can write directly to me and I answer you back. Mm-hmm. I love getting mail from everybody mm-hmm. at wilson@alakazamarchives.com.
Okay, and just ask to be put on the newsletter list and that you
can you can get on the newsletter list through the website.
Okay.
So there's three types, actually four types of membership. There's the free membership, which mm-hmm. is open to for everybody, and then you'll get the newsletter. And you get to watch the episode that I'm airing that week, which reminds me, I got to get an episode up tomorrow. And then I have three levels of paid membership because I know not everybody can afford to do a lot, so I wanted to make something simple for people that just love the show and want to help. So there's a $5 membership. And for that, you get to look at all the print material, all the stuff we scan, all the letters, and the other things like that, non-video related, because the video hosting is what's expensive. Mm-hmm. So for $15 a month, you can get access to the entire Alakazam library. That's the current plan.
But you can only have access as long as your membership is...
Correct.
Because after you stop paying, then you can no longer go back. I mean, in other words, you can't download this. It's only streaming?
Correct. We're not allowed to download.
Okay.
Legally, I can't allow downloads
because
of the content
mm-hmm.
and Kellogg's and all that.
Right.
So I have to stream it. That's my workaround for being able to deliver the content.
Right.
That it's a research. This whole project is a legally, it's a research library.
Okay.
And that's why it's called the Archives. Emotionally, mm-hmm. it's a new magic community.
Yes.
And that's what I want to create. I want to. I discovered that Alakazam is more than just a magic word. It's more than just a TV show. It's actually an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, Alakazam is the amazement and the joy and the delight that you get when you first saw a magic trick for the first time. And when you watch these shows, it brings back that emotion. It's really amazing to see how this team, this incredible team of people, Bob Fenton, Robert Towner, Harland, or Torchy as he was called, Leo Behnke, you mentioned he was involved with many of them, Dick Zimmerman also wrote in when he was in the Navy, when he was out at sea, he was sending in episode ideas. Of course, John Gaughan, Bev Bergeron, of course, Mom and Dad, and other, Lynn Searles was another big part of it. How they all worked together to create this thing out of love, and not for the dollar sign, because the dollars weren't there. And the fact that they kept it alive for 5 years, losing money every year. Every show lost money. So they'd go out and they'd do fair dates. They'd do everything they could to make money, work in the heat and the open air, you know, and the mud out in the fairgrounds,
yeah,
to make some money to go back so they could go make more TV shows.
Somebody told me years ago that Mark Wilson has been a millionaire and bankrupt more than anyone else. You know, it's like, well,
Maybe Ravine. I don't know. There's a good
Ravine. Yeah, Ravine had that too. It's like, yeah, because your dad would like go out and make a lot of money, and then he put it into something, and you know, and then
I found an interesting letter that he wrote to the executives at CBS, and he said, "My business advisor has told me I should file bankruptcy, and that way I won't have to pay you back for all the studio time. But I intend to have a long career in the television industry, and I don't want to have that reputation. So if you could please help make a payment program for me, I will go out and make the money, and I will pay you back for the, what I owe you on these shows."
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, how many people do that?
The rumors that Dad went bankrupt many times is just the fact that he took the company to the point of its limit, and then he would liquidate everything from the company to help pay the bills. Mm-hmm. Without filing bankruptcy.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. On a completely different subject, it occurred to me about, you were talking about your mom in San Diego. Where did they first meet?
At a New Year's Eve party that was thrown by one of Dad's fraternity brothers.
At University of Texas.
SMU.
SMU, sorry.
Dad was not only the head cheerleader.
Yeah, I remember.
He was an overachiever.
Yeah.
But also the head of – he was a president of his fraternity. Mm-hmm. And one of the fraternity brothers knew a flight attendant from American Airlines. And so they conned all the cute flight attendants to come to the
fraternity party. Sure.
New Year's Eve party.
And that's where they met.
And Mom actually came with a different date, met my father. And when New Year's hit, my mom and my dad kissed.
This sounds like Back to the Future.
It does.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Like during the prom or something, yeah. Their eyes met and they kissed. And so if you go back, you know, you change that or whatever, you know, you get in your DeLorean. But holy cow.
One of the interesting things, I don't know how much time we have, but as I'm going through this history and really digging into what really happened, not just the glory of watching the show and the fun of the magic – and exploring the secrets and all that.
Yeah.
But the business side of it and how determined my father has been throughout the years, and now learning how determined my mother has been throughout the years. The
perfect team.
The team, yes. I get energy from performing shows. So when I rehearse, that's the work. And when I do the show, that's the play. Mm-hmm. That's the way I grew up. If you don't work hard, you can't play. Mm-hmm. If you don't do your homework and study your magic, you can't go do the show with us. Mm-hmm. So I worked really hard to learn the magic so I could go out and play and be on stage.
Sure.
The selling the show wasn't part of that. So I developed a fear for selling. And I hate selling. I hate going out and trying to tell somebody how great I am and that they should buy my show. Mm-hmm. And so most of my sales come from somebody who's seen me do another show and they call. And like Disney came from another show. And the Knott's Berry Farm contract came from the guy at Disney. And each of these connections has led one to another.
Mm-hmm. The domino's just fallen.
As opposed to my father, who's a pioneer. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, Dad, where did this pioneering spirit come from? When you married Mom and you had my brother, all of a sudden you've got a family and you're a very low-income family in the middle of Dallas, Texas, you're doing magic shows. Did that drive you to go out and sell more? And I've got to do a bigger show because I got to support them. He said, no, I was always that way. And then I thought back. I said, well, that's right, because when you were in the fraternity before you met Mom, you had to be the president. You had to.
Sure.
And then I went back even further. Well, when you were working at Douglas Magic Land as a demonstrator, that wasn't enough. You had to go out and do magic shows for Morton's Potato Chips and develop that whole marketing program. Mm-hmm. He just loves selling. He loves the challenge. He loves. And I said, well, what about the disappointment when they don't buy it? What happens
then?
Because for me, that's just daunting. It's like, oh, sure. Man, I feel horrible. He says he blames himself for not explaining it fully.
They just don't understand.
They just didn't understand that this was the right thing for them to do. Mm-hmm. They really should have used my idea.
And so that's why he really didn't talk much about that video you were saying, that because although that was well made, that annual report, but they didn't renew that.
And so that's the
so he kind of buried the tape.
That's the other thing, is he lets things go. Mm-hmm. When something doesn't work, he doesn't fester.
Dwell on it, yeah.
And dwell, yeah. Mm-hmm. He lets it go. And I think that's a real important lesson. I'm sorry I'm learning it now at this age. I wish I'd learned it when I was younger. But we're going to make use of it.
Yeah.
But I can share it with other people.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow, that's quite a phenomenal story.
Even today, Dad's 90 years old, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I go down to the office in Valencia, and I'm there often during the week with Mom and Dad. And it's the big building. That's where we have all the stuff.
Sure.
And I have to go through the archives. And like, Dad, I can't spend the afternoon sitting talking with you in the office. I have to go upstairs because I have volunteers that are scanning fan letters. I've got people that are helping me to dig through stuff and move stuff in the warehouse or whatever mm-hmm. it might be. But Dad's like, could you just sit with me for 5 minutes? I have a new idea I want to tell you about.
Even at 90 years old.
At 90 years old, he's got phenomenal ideas. Marketing ideas for birthday party magicians to put together giant collective agency that would promote birthday party magicians on the internet and
yeah.
ways to use modern technology for shows. And
wow.
I want to do those with you, of course. But I've got to finish the other thing that we started 2 years ago. You know?
Yeah, so many things. He just needs a staff of people to kind of pick up all these things that he's dropping.
And my mother is just constantly frustrated with it.
Yeah.
Oh, Mark, not another idea.
He's never going to retire.
No.
He's going to keep moving, just like a shark, you know. Yeah, keep feeding.
That was really nice when they had the classes at the Magic Castle.
Yeah.
He was focused on...
Yeah.
making new lessons.
Mm-hmm.
So he was constantly going through his magic books.
Sure.
Going through the old books that he grew up with, learning
mm-hmm.
from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I found the J.J. Bobo coin book.
Right.
And he said, oh, yeah, he lived, in Texas.
So he was in Texas. A guy, yeah, he used to work at the school shows around Texas. They probably knew each other.
He knew him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Phenomenal. Well, thank you very much, Greg. I appreciate it. This has been just... a great look in the past and also kind of towards the future as well. And again, for people to go, they should be going to alakazamarchives.com in order to help out and just to send you an email if they have a request or want to know something, just wilson@alakazamarchives.com.
Yes.
Now, listen, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and so I always like to end by asking my guests of what is your philosophy of life? You know, what do you live by? What's important to you? What's your magic word or phrase?
Wow. Well, it all relates back to Alakazam.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I was a kid, people would ask me, why do you want to do magic?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, to make people happy.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Make people happy.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. Yeah,
it is.
Greg, thanks very much. It's been just nothing less than fantastic. This has been a great trip down memory lane for me, and also learning a lot of insight about how the brain of Mark Wilson was thinking and still is. And so that's phenomenal then, too. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that is Greg Wilson. This is Scotty out. Wow, what a bunch of really great stories. Thank you very much, Greg. That was just a fantastic chat, and the monkey shoulder scotch wasn't bad either. But I certainly enjoyed spending some time with you and you sharing those stories. And also I want to remind everybody, if they will go to alakazamarchives.com, you can find more information on what he's doing on the legacy of the Magic Land of Alakazam, see some videos, sign up, help subscribe, and help fund the project and everything. Do what you can, please, to help out this worthwhile project.
project. While we were talking, by the way, one of the things that I mentioned was a book that was recommended to me by Rudy Kobe some years ago, and I couldn't remember the name of it. It is called Skywalking, The Life and Films of George Lucas by Dale Pollack. And if you go to the Magic Word Podcast, this week's episode, there on the blog is a place where you can click on that, go to Amazon, and that way that you can purchase that book if you're interested. It's a paperback book. And that way, of course, by using the Amazon link, as we talked about earlier, you'll be helping the Magic Word since we're an affiliate of Amazon. Well, I said at the beginning that we had a couple of winners, and now I think is a good time for us to announce who those two people were. And I first of all want to thank everyone who had entered the contest, and I like to keep these open for a couple of weeks because I know it takes a while for people to kind of get around and to listen to these podcasts and digest them, and then I don't want them to feel like, oh, I just missed the contest. Well, going to keep this open whenever I do contests for at least a couple of weeks, and so now is the time for us to announce the winners. And the winners' names are Sean Hull and Stacy Archip. Congratulations, guys. Your DVDs are in the mail, and you should be receiving them soon so you can learn a few new tricks from Dan Fleshman. And thank you, Dan, again for offering those DVDs. Well, I want to thank you again for tuning in and listening. And if you haven't subscribed to our pod letter, please do, so that way that you know about these contests and also know who's going to be coming up from week to week. And we are soon going to be going into the Christmas and Hanukkah holiday season, and so that's going to start here next week, and so we're going to have a surprise guest for you next week. It may be a surprise, or maybe it won't be a surprise. It's an annual guest. Let me just kind of leave it at that. And so until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, always try to make people happy. This is Scotty out.